Welcome back to another episode of Pick and Pod. I'm your host, Chaz McAdams, here with Caleb Stein, Brendan Shorey. We're in the middle of the NBA Finals talking about the Celtics versus the Mavericks. We got some Boston and some Dallas representation here, but I just want to keep it a little more specific than we're used to. What is everyone's mental state right now? Because I know all three of us, our mental state is pretty contingent on how our teams are playing. So how are we feeling right now? Start with Caleb, go to Brendan.
Feeling good, feeling confident, optimistically, but also a little cautious going into Dallas. We'll talk more about that, but feeling good right now.
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm doing fine. I mean, this series isn't over by a long shot. I mean, yeah, Celtics won two in Boston, but it's back in Dallas now. It gives me a little bit of hope, and Kyrie is able to pick it up. Well, then this could be a series, so I'm hopeful.
Yeah, it could be a series. I mean, Kyrie's always a big question mark. I heard he's going to pick it up in the finals, and then I heard he's going to pick it up after game one. And now I'm hearing he's going to pick it up after game two. So I guess we're going to see if he picks it up when the duck boats are going down Causeway, because that's what it's looking like right now. But I want to stay on Kyrie for a little bit and talk about the impact that he has had on this Mavericks team as a whole, because even before him, there was even with Porzingis being on the Mavericks, or Jalen Brunson before he became the Jalen Brunson we know today, there was no doubt in anyone's mind who was ever going to take the last shot in a game. It was going to be Luka Doncic. It was going to be Luka Doncic the second he got drafted. So to look at and see probably the best addition, the best player that Luka has ever played with, being Kyrie Irving, to see him fall how he has, what do you guys think about how this is impacting Kyrie's all-time legacy?
I mean, obviously it hurts, especially when you look at how for coming into the finals, actually, a lot of people were saying that this is one of the best offensive backcourts ever. And then Kyrie comes in, he's not playing well. And obviously it hurts. I mean, he's supposed to be the guy with the finals experience. He's supposed to be the guy who's mentoring Luka, who's been there before, who knows what it takes. And yet he's not doing what it takes to win. He's not showing up. He's not helping Luka out as much as he's supposed to. And so, yeah, it does hurt when you're supposed to be that guy in the finals, that guy who knows, who's been there before, who knows what it is, and you're not. It definitely does hurt the legacy a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think Luke and Kyrie so far, game one and game two, have been less than the sum of their parts so far. You have, a bigger ego almost decidedly in Kyrie over Luka, and obviously a much better player at the moment in Luka over Kyrie. And Kyrie's just not the guy. He's not a smooth teammate. We know that. That's not a controversial thing to say. And that hurts in the finals, but he has so much potential to be a helpful teammate, right? He knows Boston better than anyone on the Dallas Mavericks. He knows this specific Boston team better than anyone in the Dallas Mavericks. And from the Dallas perspective, you're counting on Kyrie to step up in this particular series. We love the Kyrie coming back to Boston narrative, and he didn't deliver in game one and two. And there's a big chip on his shoulder, I think, more than anyone's on the Mavs to not even finish the job, but to start the job in Dallas tomorrow.
Yeah, I think Kyrie's due for a good game. I think that he's I don't think he'll play this way all finals. I think that's like impossible. I think Boston does rattle him a lot. I don't think he'll have a single good game there for the rest of the playoffs. If it ends up being multiple, I think the Mavericks win tomorrow. I think the Celtics will close out in five in Boston. But the issue kind of keeping it in the backcourt is that I think a lot, and Shorey and I were on last week talking about what I guess the conversation boiled down to is we know the offensive superstardom of the Dallas backcourt, and we know the defensive pedigree of the Celtics backcourt. It's who's going to make up the difference on the other side of the ball. Are Kyrie and Luka going to step up defensively and not be the liabilities we think they are, the traffic cones that they tend to be during the regular season, even early in the playoffs? Or are Drew and Derek going to step up and be that offensive spark that the Celtics sometimes require when they get into the flat spots that they tend to get into. For me, it was never in doubt, but I feel like for the mass media, a lot of people were saying that Drew Holiday had just the game of his career on Sunday night versus the Dallas Mavericks going off for the Celtics, definitely the most important player there. And I think that the offense of Celtics backcourt of Drew and Derek has eclipsed the defense of Kyrie and Luka. And honestly, the offense of both teams have been kind of neck and neck. I mean, Drew Holiday himself almost outscored Luka Doncic. I didn't think we'd be saying that sentence very often in the playoffs, but it's true. It did happen. So I just kind of want to gauge where you guys think, in terms of backcourts, what needs to be changed on the Dallas side and what the Celtics should do to adjust.
I think it's really going to come down to Kyrie stepping up offensively. I mean, there were never really huge expectations for Kyrie and Luka on the defensive side of the ball. It was go and guard, some of their worst options on offense, which given the Celtics starting five, they don't have any bad options on offense. But you stick Luka on Kyrie on two of the less threatening guys out there, and then you let them go to work on offense. And so that was the expectation coming into the series. Luka has played just like that Kyrie has, and I think that's what we're missing right now is if Kyrie can get to that point where his offensive game is so good that you can overlook the defensive liability a little bit, which even with Kyrie, he's played some pretty good defense throughout the playoffs this year. If you're able to get that up to that standard where they are outplaying this Celtics backcourt, outplaying Tatum, who's not having a great series, then I think that the Mavs have a chance.
I think I'm, yeah, I mean, I think the general theme so far is the chip on the shoulder is on Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving steps up, the Mavs are at the level that they quote unquote should be, and they could take two. They're not going to take three, could take two from the Celtics if Kyrie plays out of his mind. If he does what we probably think he's going to do, which is he's going to really step up in game three, he has to. There's almost no option for him not to. He's such a talented player and a motivated player. He has skin in the game to say the absolute least in this series. And he's going to play out of his mind game three, but I think he's just not supported enough by other guys. And like you said, like Luka is kind of a traffic cone on defense. And he there's just not enough. But I do like what you're saying, Brendan, in that if Kyrie can use his offense as defense in a way, right, where the defense doesn't need to step up because Kyrie's stepping up so much offensively, if that's the name of the game for the Mavs, I don't hate that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just boils down to like if because it's not just on Kyrie. He has definitely been the farthest drop off of what we've seen, but like PJ Washington hasn't been stellar. He hasn't been stellar like I thought he was gonna. He's not a great third option. Derek Lively is unable to guard Al Horford at times, let alone Kristaps Porzingis. Also, a lot of behavior from Lively that I did not expect. A lot of barking, he seems to be very easily frustrated when calls don't go his way, or when he's unable to get stops. Josh Green not doing much of anything really. Tim Hardaway Jr. It's just all the pieces that made the Mavericks offense so exciting are falling as flat as they possibly could in the finals. It's not just on Kyrie. Him stepping up would make a difference, but I also need like Jane Hardy to look like he's ever played basketball before in his life. And it's not, I have not seen a lot of that so far, not just in the playoffs, but in the finals specifically. There's and to keep, we're obviously going to keep it in the finals, but probably something that I want to talk about the most, which is like going to be no surprise, but I think is a very dynamic and nuanced player right now, and someone that I think needs to be handled with a lot of care is the media discourse on Jason Tatum. It is very easy to look at the box score. It is very easy to look at the end of games, the point totals, and say that he is the worst starter on the Celtics. And I think that I want to get your guys' takes first on this too, but how do you think Tatum's play has been handicapping the Celtics? if at all? Or do you just think that the Celtics are so overpowered that they just don't need Jason Tatum?
I think that they're good enough that they can succeed with him playing as bad as he is. I mean, he looks like a glorified role player out there. He's shooting 30% from the field. No. You got to hear me. I know you can't just look at the box score, but
No,
I've seen
that
dudes
works
like Killian
extremely well.
Hayes. I've seen dudes like Killian Hayes throw up 15 assists in a game. Tatum's not doing anything special right now. I mean, when you're shooting 30% from the field and you're on that efficiency, taking 20 shots a game, you are not helping your team at all. You really aren't. And so, I mean, if he was able to step it up and play like the superstar he's supposed to be, well, then the Celtics will blow the Mavs out. But he's not playing well. He's not super detrimental to the Celtics' success because they have so many options around him.
I agree in some aspects and I don't in others. I think in the Pacers series and in earlier series in the playoffs, when JT didn't step up, that hurt the Celtics more than game one, game two so far in the finals. I think that one of the main reasons that Holiday had one of the games of his life is because of guys like Jason Tatum who took a step back. You can point to obviously going six for 22 from the floor in game two. I'm talking about Jason Tatum, but the 12 assists you got to look at. I know we're not supposed to read off box scores here when we're talking about this argument because it is very nuanced, right? We're looking at the eye test more than anything here, but I think that Jason Tatum is not playing nearly as well as he should be, but I don't think that's a big problem. That's not cause for concern. The Celtics have a deep enough lineup. And Jason Tatum is a smart enough player, as he definitely showed in game two, that if the shots aren't falling, the passes will. And if the shots aren't falling for him, they'll fall for Holiday, they'll fall for White, they'll fall for Horford, they'll fall for any of the other four guys on the floor, Kristaps, they'll fall for other guys. And the Celtics have the personnel to where that can be acceptable for Jason Tatum to not play by any stretch of the imagination well. But for the Celtics to pick up the slack and win solidly against the Mavs in game two.
Yeah, I think the narrative of him being unselfish by some Celtics fans is definitely untrue. I mean, you see the shot taking, it's getting a little ridiculous. But that word that Shorey said, role player, and a lot of people talking about Jason Tatum being replaceable on the Celtics team. I've heard Josh Hart, same outcome. I've heard Benedict Mathurin, same outcome. Heard even guys like all the way down to Kevin Huerter, same outcome. As in the Celtics would have the same wins and same outcomes, play just as good basketball if those guys were on the floor instead of Jason Tatum. Could not disagree with that more. I think two things that not enough people talk about when it comes to basketball is coaching systems and on-court gravity. Regardless of how bad Jason Tatum plays, no matter what, he is getting double teamed the second he steps behind, the second he steps into the 3-point line. The defense is constantly collapsing around him, constantly getting double, triple teamed. And that's how he's able to get 12 assists. In the second part we'll talk about, which is the segment I want to move on to a little later, is because of how the Celtics offense is run, which is built for pure driving kicks, almost to the point of failure, to where the Celtics give up one-on-one takes at a rim just to get a corner three. That's something that's been very frustrating for Boston so far this playoffs. But Jason Tatum is not replaceable on the Celtics team. You don't get the dynamic play, the three levels of scoring. His potential creates defensive gaps to where people will double him to try to change his shot, and it leaves other guys open. People aren't doing that for Josh Hart. People aren't doing that for Benedict Mathurin and Kevin Huerter. You know what I mean? So while I think Tatum and the all-time greats should still be able to score in those settings, Tatum has shown so far he's not there yet. And this playoffs has confirmed to me that he's not a 1A on a championship team, but not a 1A guy in the league. He's one of the faces of the league. I think he is on marketability. and he is such a good player, but it just seems at times when the chips are down that he's not able to get it done through the kind of pressure that the Kevin Durants, that the Steph Currys, the LeBron James in their current state. I'm not talking all time, I'm talking currently in this league, the other go-to guys, the Luka Doncic's, the other go-to guys in this league, what they're able to do through the same pressure that Tatum gets, he's just not getting it done. But not only do I not think it's detrimental to the Celtics offense, which we've seen because they've had so many, even though they had a terrible game, they were still in game two, they were still able to get it over the Mavericks. The fact that they have had so much success in spite of Tatum's lackluster play in spurts shows to me how good the Celtics as a team are. Individual players don't win championships. Teams do. And that's why I'm not afraid for the Celtics, but my fandom of the Boston Celtics and Jason Tatum have slowly and slowly started to separate to where I believe in the Celtics more than ever. And I am so low on Jason Tatum right now. So, that being said, I want to talk about the sixth person on the floor for the Boston Celtics, Joe Mazzulla, getting a lot of flack by people, including myself, early in his time with the Celtics. If we had Ime, we'd have two championships right now. If Joe wasn't such a bad coach, Celtics would have gotten 70 wins, blah, 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 blah. That's why they fell short against the Heat, getting out coached by Spoelstra, which I think he did. Mazzulla ball has been fantastic so far. The driving kicks, the pace of play on offense, slowing down on defense, just mind-numbing passing cuts. It is such fundamental, pure James Naismith praising, Bobby Knight-esque, just fundamental basketball. The offense is so simple, but the reason you have 24 seconds on a shot clock is because you can run it. You can run it out as many times as you want. The Celtics run clock management like the third quarter, where they don't shoot until they see a 20 on the shot clock. And I just want to get your guys' perspective, not only on how good he has been and how much his stock has been raised in your guys' eyes, but how much I think he is running laps around Jason Kidd from the coaching position.
He is. I've never been huge on Kidd, especially with his. It really comes down to his timeout usage and stopping runs. I mean, game after game, watching the Mavs, watching whoever they're playing go on an 8-0, 10-0, 12-0 run and no timeouts being called. And then this series, you see the Mavs get even an inch of hope, start to go on a run, and there's a timeout called by the Celtics. And that's just one minor thing too. That's just one minor thing. And you look at how this Celtics offense is run, and yeah, you got to have the right pieces in there for it to work, for this driving kick to work. You got to have some great shooters out there, which they do, and it works to perfection. And that's because with the team that he was given, Mazzulla was able to come up with that, hey, driving kick. I mean, Derek White from 3-2 Holiday. There's not a player on the Celtics right now who's getting minutes in the finals that cannot shoot the three ball well. And I think that's why they are doing so well with this strategy, is that it's super well coached. You have the players there, and it's hard to stop defensively because you mentioned you can run as many times as you possibly can during that 24-second shot clock. I mean, it's simple drive, draw the double, and then kick it to the open defender. And if the defense rotates, run it again, and so you're going to get open looks. And so I think that yeah, he is coaching circles around Kidd right now.
I think the drive and kick only works if it can afford to not work. I think we saw it a lot of the times in, I think it was game 4 and 5 of the Pacers series, where they weren't hitting their shots as well as they were statistically, right? They weren't regressing to the mean there. Tatum, not good at all. Holiday, Chris, or not Kristaps, but Horford, Derek White, were not hitting their averages at all, far below in game 4 and 5, and they adjusted in my mind way too late, to the point where The threes were not gonna hit. It just wasn't gonna be the Celtics' day. They had to adjust with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and instead they adjusted with 2 or 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, right? And they got out of there with a win, which is fine, but I would appreciate a little bit less, or excuse me, a little bit more of a kind of loosely held hand with the drive and kick offense, where if it works, which it has in game one and it has in game two, but if it doesn't work, there needs to be an adjustment quicker, because I think the Mavs are a more talented team than the Pacers, to where they can, with their offensive weapons, less so with their defensive weapons, as we talked about earlier, but with their offensive weapons, nip the Celtics in the bud, and the Celtics can't afford to have a 5 minute period on the floor where the kick doesn't work. Because if the kick doesn't work, they have to do something else with it, with the Mavs, because the Mavs are just too talented on offense, and the Celtics can't afford to be in any sort of limbo period with their offense at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan. I'm definitely a fan of Mazzulla Ball with this personnel. I don't know if it works on any other team in the league, just because you have two three-level scorers in Tatum and Brown. It's such an interesting, like, your on-ball creators are not your point guards, so you're able to space the floor with shooters. It's almost what Dallas could do if Luka had another forward pair where. Because they've chronically done that, where, like, when they ran with Tim Hardaway and Jalen Brunson, and it was like three guards out there, and Luka and Brunson would drive in and just and be able to kick out to so many guys that could shoot, and Kristaps was there as well. It's hard for me to gauge where the Celtics move on, like another wrinkle in their offense. Like, it seems almost unguardable. The only thing that can really get in the way of that offense is the Celtics' own mental mistakes, like not taking up, like it's different. It's almost as basketball changing as like D'Antoni ball in Houston, like running that PJ Tucker at the five. We're only shooting from under the basket and beyond the arc, taking the most efficient shots. It's that with a little bit more style and a little bit more freedom, which I think is how you have to run an offense in 2024. You can't run it as rigid as, like, let's say, like Westfall did in Indiana, or like Jack Kenny, like I said, like guys like Bobby Knight, just like systems, or even like the triangle, I don't think would work in the modern NBA, just because stuff that's so rigid and so, players have too much. Players are too talented for you to not utilize four of your five guys as shot creators on any given night. So it gives and it takes. You know what I mean? I think the upside is far, far greater than the downside. And I think if the Celtics can continue to play like that and maybe tweak it a little bit mentally to where they're not. They're able to make the decision on the pass quicker so that they can have more time to take a layup at the basket, because so many get passed up. Oh my gosh. So many shots by Jason Tatum getting guarded by Kyrie Irving at the rim, and he's kicking out. Like, I hate that. But I love when Sam Hauser is hitting like sidestep threes in the corner. So you give and you take. You give and you take, you give and you take. Before the NBA Finals started, Stein and I were on the pod together, that little preview show, and everyone gave their finals MVP picks. I picked Jaylen Brown. I'm looking very smart right now, I won't lie. He has been fantastic for the Celtics. I've always said this, that Tatum's peaks may be higher, but his valleys are so much lower. Brown is just so consistent. I think by now the left hand argument is gone. He only creates, I feel like he's only creating on the left side of the basket, whether or not he's crossing the key or just posterizing people, freak athlete, score on all levels. I think Jaylen Brown, I think he deserves some more respect in the league. He was left off an all NBA team. I don't know if you can do that. I don't know if you really do that with the way he's been playing in the finals, at least. What do you guys think?
I mean, Yeah, he's playing great in the finals and throughout the playoffs. Leaving him off an all NBA team, I mean, you could either that one is could go either way. I mean, he's elevated his game in the playoffs for sure, and he's kind of taken over this team where Tatum has been struggling, and so that would make you want to make the argument that yeah, like he should have been on one of those all NBA teams, but. Throughout the regular season, it was it Tatum was really that the guy in Boston. I mean, was Brown a close second? Yeah, but he didn't have to play to the level where he's playing now, where you want to make the argument he should have made it. And so I think it could go either way. I'm fine with him not making one of the teams. I think I wouldn't be mad if he had made one of the All-NBA teams, but I mean, I think if he plays this way next season, he'll definitely make it.
He definitely has to keep it up. I also want to flag six turnovers in game two from Jaylen Brown, which wasn't great. I think that he definitely needs to lock in
Him at
one.
the same though. That was just like usage. I think the Celtics have a super high turnover. That's because they never don't have the ball in their hands.
Right, that's fair.
They're
That's fair.
yeah, that's like not to just like shut that, but like when I the turnovers that I saw and literally all of Jason Tatum's turnovers in that game one, seeing those, none of them were like excusable. Like it was all like getting the ball, getting your pocket picked, making bad passes, getting picked off, getting bad shots, getting blocked. The Celtics are like the first team that I've seen where their two main shot creators are high turnover guys, but they're still shooting an efficient, besides game two, still shooting at a relatively efficient clip.
Yeah, I mean, Jaylen Brown's been solid so far in the series. I think that he's definitely the most consistent player that we have on the floor. And I agree with you, right? The values for Brown are a lot higher than Tatum's, but his peaks are a lot lower. And in the finals, you like the stars, right? You like the highlight reels, but you also need that bedrock and that cornerstone. And Jaylen Brown's that guy for the Celtics. So I think as far as value, right, when we talk about MVP, that's got to go to Jaylen Brown so far when the Celtics pull it out, because Jason Tatum, we could have a hell of the next two or three games, but Brown is going to be the cornerstone. And I'm not worried about Brown, right? Brown doesn't have to do anything for me. Jason Tatum has a chip on his shoulder. Jaylen Brown doesn't. Jaylen Brown can be Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum has to sort of rise to this level of.
You don't think Brown has more expectations with that contract? I think people scrutinize it. I think
I
he
think
can
right now,
earn the same.
when we're talking about going into game three of the NBA Finals, right in this very moment, Jason Tatum has more expectations for him.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's what
Yeah.
I'm talking about. I'm talking about in this moment right now. Overall, you can talk about the contract, but I feel like that's so in the peripheral right now when we're talking about the finals and we're talking about going to Dallas tomorrow. But even kind of generally, I mean, generally this season, you can make a case that it maybe would have been Brown, but in the playoffs, it's always Tatum. And in the finals, it's definitely Tatum. So I think that Brown is going to be the guy who doesn't have to deliver, but ironically is going to deliver more and has delivered more than Tatum so far.
I think that's true. I think yeah, Tatum might have to be the guy, but I think, which is interesting because basketball is full of parity. We know this. With the Celtics facing the Mavericks, they kind of face two of the same predicament, and it with an embarrassment of riches in. They have both teams have two guys that are comfortable with taking the last shot. That I'm at least personally comfortable taking the last shot. Do you think that the Celtics are the first NBA team to like be a full binary solar system? Like fully, because clearly the Mavericks aren't having success with it. I mean, they made it to the NBA Finals and the series isn't over, but one is regressing super, super heavily. And I think Luka's ball dominance is part of that because Kyrie, I think if he was the main guy on a team in the NBA Finals, would be able to get into his rhythm a lot quicker and a lot better. But are the Celtics the first team, I would say, in NBA history to have two go-to guys and have and have tangible success with it.
No, I think no, I mean,
One has to defer to the other.
LeBron and Kyrie dropping 40 points each in a game. I mean, you look at their success, even if they weren't winning all those finals. I mean, going to the finals that many times together in Cleveland, I think that was definitely very
I feel like it was
similar.
always, but like, even though Kyrie took that shot, I feel like it was always LeBron's team. That's why Kyrie left. You know what I mean? Like, is it Tatum's, is it really necessarily Tatum's team right now? I think they both have equal claim. And this is not purely on court. This is chemistry. This is how they interact not only with each other, but with the other players. I think that it was always LeBron's team. That's why Kyrie left. It was always Shaq's team. That's why Kobe made him. That's why Kobe made them trade him. That it was always Steph Curry's team. That's why Kevin Durant got out of there. I think taking the last shot might have been bad nomenclature on my part. But in terms of ownership of the locker room, ownership of the franchise, both have equal claim.
Yeah. I guess in the locker room, the media paints it a different way. A lot of the media paints it Tatum's team. I'm sure a lot of people think of it as Tatum's team. But when it comes down to it, I could see an argument where you want to say it could be Jaylen Brown's team, based off performance this playoffs, based off how Tatum has not drastically outperformed Jaylen Brown any of the past few years, really. There could easily be an argument made. Whether that's one I would argue, I don't know. But I could see where you're coming from.
When it comes to marketability, national marketability, that's Jason Tatum over Jaylen Brown in a heartbeat. We know that. I think when it comes to the locker room, yeah, pretty 50-50. But there's so many ways in which you can kind of describe, and I don't want to say gatekeep, but kind of use certain metrics to support a certain binary. Because in a lot of ways, when it comes to the last shot, I don't think there's too much of a binary there. And obviously you backpedaled there, so to speak. But I think when it comes to locker room, sure, 50-50 binary parity, absolutely. I think when it comes to the last shot, not really much. And when it comes to who has ownership of the team, well, that's hard, right? Because there's ownership of the team from a fan perspective, market perspective, the five guys on the floor perspective, right? Who does Mazzulla agree with, right? I mean, we all know the interviews that came out two days ago where Jason Kidd was calling out Jaylen Brown as being the best player on the team. And then, Tatum kind of salty said, yeah, I think, we're all kind of the same guys on the same team and all that whole nonsense. But I think, yeah, I think there's parity in a way, but I don't think there's as much parity as you suggest necessarily, Chaz. I don't think this is parity beyond belief or a binary that's never been seen before by really any means. It's nice to see, it's nice to have, but I think when it comes to personnel and the depth of the Celtics, we're talking more about the six or seven that the Celtics have that can fuel the offense that they run so well, rather than the parity of Tatum and Brown. I think that's more of the focus, the seven rather than the two.
Celtics and the Mavericks tip off Wednesday, June 12th. That is going to do it for us this week on Pick and Pod. Great chopping it up with Caleb Stein. Not so great with Brendan Shorey just because he's a Mavericks fan and kind of hate his guts right now. But when the duck boats ride, I'll welcome him back into my life. But that is going to do it for Caleb Stein, for Brendan Shorey. I've been Chaz McAdams. Pick and Pod is a production of WFUV Sports.